think I'll go to prayer every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and we're getting everything in the green. All right, we'll get started then. Good morning. My name is John Case. You're listening to the Winners and Losers radio program, which is an occasional program now. We went on for almost 10 years at Shepherd until they threw us off. This morning we're going to be doing a discussion with Kevin Carden, who's the, I'm going to have him identify some more about himself, but I know he's currently the town recorder in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, here in Jefferson County, and he's a candidate for County Commission, Jefferson County, and so we're going to be talking about the issues in that campaign, see if we can get me to understand them a little better, and then hopefully for those of us that are going to be listening to this as a podcast, which will be probably up this afternoon on enlightenradio.org, podcasts.enlightenradio.org, or they're also available on democracyroad.podbean.com. So let's start today with asking Kevin who he is and what he does for a living and why he's getting involved in Jefferson County politics. Go ahead.
Well, that's a pretty big question. I've been the town recorder in Harpers Ferry since 2009. I ran for recorder in 2007 as a write-in candidate and came in second. And I was on the ballot in 2009 and won, and I've been reelected every 2 years since then. So I'm still currently serving as recorder in Harpers Ferry and a full member of the town council. I came to West Virginia in 1997, and I came to Jefferson County in 1997, and I love this area. It's beautiful. The history is wonderful. I've enjoyed living here, and in 2004, when I moved to Harpers Ferry, I fell in love with that town immediately. And so I wanted to do what I could to be a productive member of the community, and that's why I ran for recorder to begin with. And now, of course, I should also say that I work in Jefferson County. I've worked in Jefferson County since I've lived here. I've been at Royal Vendors as a technical writer and international service rep since January of 1998. So over 20 years now. And our county government, over the last year or so, has gained an unfortunate reputation for being somewhat uncivil and disrespectful to certain people. And I felt like this was a good time for me to run for the county commission seat that's up for election, because I think that I can bring back civility and respect to this commission where it's lacking right now.
Civility and respect. So, I was at one meeting, where a young African American woman, Sammy Brown, was told to shut up, basically. Mm-hmm. I thought that was offensive. How do you fix that? There's an old saying, you can't fix stupid. How do you bring back civility? Except, but you have to set an example by being civil, I suppose. Yes,
mm-hmm, absolutely. In Harpers Ferry, I've established a pretty strong reputation for being very respectful to people. I don't agree with everyone who speaks to me or speaks before the council, but at least I listen to them. I give them that respect. I treat them fairly. And I take into account what they say, what things are important to them, what things matter to them, because that's our job as public servants, is to listen to them, to represent them, to take into account what things are important to them.
So let's talk about the county then. What's important in your view in the county that... civility aside for a moment, or assuming that it was more civil, I mean, what What are the top issues that county residents should be concerned about, and what is at stake for them as they go to the ballot box this year?
Well, there are a few things. There are a few things I would like to see be done at the county level that haven't been done so far, but there are also some things that are important that need to be addressed. One of those is funding for libraries and parks and recreation. This past month, the county commission did appropriate money to libraries and to parks and recreation, which is wonderful. But before last month, those departments of the county government had come to the commission asking for money and were basically told no, or we're not going to give you the money that you need, which is not a good response. I'm a big believer in education, and libraries are a great form of education for anybody who may not have access to the internet or may not have other resources that they need.
Right, or a credit card that can buy all the books that you should probably read. Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
And so that was one of the things that that convinced me to run, along with the respect issue that I was talking about. When people come and speak before the county commission and are told to shut up, basically, or threatened to be tased, then there's something very wrong with the climate at those commission meetings, with the people who are conducting those meetings, and that has to change. And you were asking how you turn that around, basically. Once you establish a bad name for yourself, it's kind of hard to come back from that. But through civility and respect and treating people fairly and listening to them, I believe that we can do that. We can turn that image back around and bring it back to where it needs to be, serving the people and having the people be satisfied with their county commission. That's a pretty important thing.
So what are the most important financial issues affecting the county?
There are a few. Of course, this year in February, I was at a county commission where it was stated that there was about a $2.1 million revenue shortfall. And of course, the county does have, you know, some difficulty with bringing in revenue. There's not a lot of things that the county can do to implement new sources of revenue. So one of the things that I would like to do as a county commissioner is lobby the state to allow counties to have the option of home rule, similar to what municipalities have now. In 2015, after the big fire in the lower town of Harpers Ferry, we applied for home rule and were granted home rule. And that has helped us a lot. And I think that's something that we could bring to the county as well that should help to reorganize the county government, however we need to make it as efficient as possible and possibly look at new sources of revenue that the county doesn't have the option for right now.
Are there any other counties that are looking at this idea as far as you know?
There was a bill introduced in the legislature this year to allow home rule for counties, and I don't know the background for that bill,
right,
but I imagine that at least one county somewhere has approached the state about that, and so I would like to add my voice to that.
That's a very interesting idea. I mean, I think that's worth discussing. I mean, the big problem in West Virginia, as I understand, I'm coming from mostly a labor background, and you know, we kind of faced this issue in a different format when we were considering the teachers struggle over the past few years and public employees about whether or not, allowing different rates of pay, for example, in higher cost areas like the Eastern Panhandle, mm-hmm. As opposed to some other areas where cost of living is more difficult. Okay, and of course we've never been able to resolve that statewide. So far, I know Delegate Doyle one time made a kind of an effort, to get this looked at anyway. But I'm wondering, because in the history of the state of West Virginia, of course, the centralization of state services, partly a reflection of the coal industry, sort of like mono industrial policy. But nonetheless, it probably has outlived its original purpose, whether that was really a benign or not purpose. But still, it probably has outlived it. And that's an interesting idea. Has there been an effort, for example, to get some policy wonky type of discussion of that, like get the college involved around here and resources that would, you know, look at that and look at what the economic impact might be? I mean, put some numbers. It'd be great if you could put some numbers to that somewhere.
To my knowledge, that hasn't been done here.
Yeah.
But that's something that I'm certainly open to discussing once I'm elected to the county commission.
Right. It'd be a great...
all input is good input.
So I think, getting some evidence-based guidance, right, on how such a thing might be shaped or work, because it's definitely true that what can we do? For example, would the teachers be better served by a collective bargaining law? As opposed to what it is right now, they negotiate every year with the state legislature, legislative labor committees, okay? But which means that you can't have a different rate of pay in Jefferson County than you have in Logan County. You just can't. I mean, it just violates all the fraternal and others. Even the counties start to war with each other, right? Mm-hmm. You get into a huge food fight, you know, in the cafeteria.
Right.
But on the other hand, here you are in Jefferson County, and the teachers in Loudoun County make $15,000 a year more, and in Washington County, Maryland, $10,000 a year more, and everybody that's got a master's degree teaching in West Virginia has to really love the state.
Right.
You know,
and we do lose a lot of educators here to Maryland and Virginia for that reason.
Right.
I should probably mention also that I'm currently a student. I'm a college student. I'm finishing a bachelor's degree in political science. And in one of my current classes, we had a discussion a few weeks ago about teachers' pay and how in a lot of other states, it's okay that teachers are paid the same amount statewide. But here in West Virginia, we're in a very unique situation because in Jefferson County, we're right next door to the county with the highest per capita income of any county in the United States,
right.
Loudoun County. And in southern West Virginia, we have one of the 10 poorest counties in the United States, which is just, it's absolutely amazing that there's such a... income disparity across our state. So it doesn't make sense from that standpoint that teachers here in Jefferson County make the same as teachers in, say, McDowell County or Logan County or somewhere else in the state, because that makes their pay very non-competitive here. And as part of home rule, I would like to look into the idea of allowing our school board, our county school board, to get some benefit from that as well, and possibly mm-hmm. look at like a differential pay or something like that for our teachers.
Education is one issue in the county, and of course the school board has, I believe, primary responsibility for that, right? But that is the largest county income, if I'm not mistaken. The lion's share of it goes toward education. Am I right about that? I mean, in terms of the county taxes and paying for, that's
right.
In most counties, that's the case. That's right. Where the lion's share of your budget's going to go. But I understand also that now in the county, there's other issues related to the, I want to see if you can possibly explain the public service district issue to me, okay? First of all, by explaining, because I understand there's a lot of controversy about it. I see posts about it. I see there's a flap about it on Facebook this morning related to somebody whose Facebook page is being partisan about it in he's from Charlestown. Okay. But anyway, what is the public service district? What are the services that it provides? Okay, so the ordinary citizens, I've talked to people that I, around here that are pretty political in some ways, but they don't even know what it is, okay, right. What it's doing. Can you explain it?
Yeah, the public service district provides sewer service to people in Jefferson County outside the incorporated municipalities of Charlestown and Ranson. And the public service district itself is a customer of Charlestown's public service district. Okay. And that creates higher cost for the Jefferson County PSD's customers.
Right. Okay.
As a result, and Ranson also is a customer of Charlestown's PSD. So the idea is that the Jefferson County PSD, the Charlestown PSD, the Ranson PSD should all be consolidated into one system, which makes perfect sense, and I'm totally in support of that. What's been controversial is some of the issues along the way of how it's been handled by the county. And one of those issues is that there was the PSD has to go through an annual audit from the state auditor's office. And the state auditor's office hasn't found anything in the way of fraud or anything like that wrong at the PSD any year that it's been audited that I'm aware of, except that there's been some indication of maybe some poor management from time to time. Maybe finances weren't handled the way they should have been, not criminally. There's nothing of that nature going on, but maybe just not managed quite right. But overall, the audits have indicated that the PSD is running as well as it maybe could, I guess is the right word there.
Within the bounds of acceptability?
Within the bounds of acceptability. There are some things that they need to improve on from time to time, but overall it's been kind of okay. Their rates are high, but other than that, it's been kind of okay. But the county commission this past year paid $15,000 for a forensic audit of the PSD, and there doesn't seem to be a good rational reason for that, except some people have said that maybe there was a kind of a witch hunt because the certain members of the county commission wanted to see if there was something criminal going on that maybe the annual audits didn't pick up on. And the forensic audit indicated that no, there was nothing wrong going on. Again, maybe just a little bit of poor management from time to time, but that's about it. So the county commission spent $15,000 on this audit that wasn't necessary, and especially in light of the fact that the PSD is about to be consolidated, well, hopefully is about to be consolidated with the city of Charlestown. There were some people who had said to me, well, the city of Charlestown asked for this audit. I asked one of our county commissioners if that was true, and I was told that no, Charlestown didn't ask for that audit. So there's some question there about why that forensic audit was conducted.
Okay,
unless it was really a personal or political issue.
Let me ask this question. Are there going to be any personal winners and losers, you know, in terms of what they're paying for services out of this consolidation?
There should be, and there almost definitely will be. The customers who right now are served by the Jefferson County PSD should see better rates after the consolidation.
So that would be the non-incorporated areas of the county.
That's correct.
Correct. Okay, which is a lot, actually. I don't know about population-wise, but you got any idea? Well, what's the ratio of population from incorporated to non-incorporated areas? Is that a number?
I'm not certain.
I wonder what that is.
I'm not certain.
But anyway, yeah. Okay.
But there's also another issue of each public service district or public utility of that source in the state of West Virginia has to have what's called an SB 234 account, which is a certain percentage of their annual revenue that has to be held separately, sort of as a rainy day fund, but mm-hmm. for capital improvements.
Right.
And that SB 234 fund that the Jefferson County PSD currently holds, that money has been turned over to the city of Charlestown as part of the consolidation. But there were no conditions set on what that money was for. There should have been a condition set saying that this SB 234 money has to be held as SB 234 money after the consolidation, and there wasn't. It's about $500,000, and that money is just being turned over to Charlestown unconditionally.
And what does Charlestown say about it?
I haven't spoken to the city of Charlestown about it, but I've spoken to some irate customers about it.
And irate, I mean, this would be customers in the existing public service district, right?
Yes.
That are now, there's no, in effect, backstop in case everything breaks, their line breaks. That's what they're upset about, or?
Right, and I'm certain that the city of Charlestown is going to do what's right for their customers. I have no doubt about that. But there has to be public assurance that this is being handled correctly. And one of those assurances is that this money that they've, the customers have paid into over the years is going to be held for the reason that it was paid
collected,
into in the
yeah,
first place.
Right, right. All right, so so are there people for and against? I mean, where's the contest here exactly? I mean, why? I'm trying to figure out why they would not agree to such conditions or why they would not be proposed, and I can't come up with an answer.
Your guess is really as good as mine.
Yeah. Okay. well, let me take another question. Every few years, right, there's a school levy that gets passed that's necessary to, I think, deal with. It's for school expenditures. And then without it, I'm told that, you know, about a third of the schools would have to close.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, there has been a concerted effort in the last election, I believe, and, you know, to not pay it. And also, I see a lot of efforts by some people in the legislature, including, State Senator Rucker, who seems to be fine with destroying the public education system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting it exactly the way I think it is, okay? I don't know. I mean, if you underfund it or you privatize it, or you, how are you going to afford a second, a school system that's charter in Jefferson County? I mean, where's the money for that come from? Yeah. But there seems to be a concerted effort to undermine the public education system, not improve it, and I don't quite understand that. But it's definitely happening.
Right.
If you're wealthy, it doesn't matter. You can just pay for a private school and send somebody someplace, and maybe you'll get the education you thought you were going to get. Maybe not. I don't know. But for most people, if they don't have a decent public education system, they don't have a future.
Right. That's right. That's right. And the question of where the funding for that comes from, I haven't heard that addressed myself. I have a very strong opinion about the ideas that have been proposed, and most of those opinions involve a lot of swear words.
Yeah. So, how could they do that? How's that possible? Well, I think, you know, one of the things I like is that an evidence-based approach to policy, okay, because I think there are some people out there, I mean, maybe they're on a witch hunt, or maybe they're on this, or maybe on that. But in my experience, most of those folks got their feet firmly planted in midair when it comes to, you know, oh, hey, it's raining. Should we put on a raincoat? anyway, so I like that idea that you approach things from an evidence-based point of view, if possible. And I know my for years, I had Lynn Windmeyer and Walt Pelish on alternate weeks on my program in Shepherdstown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I don't remember agreeing with Walt much of anything. And on the other hand, he was not an impractical man, okay?
Right.
You know, he didn't walk around like he could walk on water, like, you know, like some folks can. But... And I felt that way also, even with some of the other people on the commission. I'm Jane Tapp, who's a Republican. I'm not a Republican, but they all seemed like they didn't. They were talking about reality, and I see now. I get the.
Yeah, I think that Jane, since you mentioned her, is a very sensible person.
Right.
And. Unfortunately, there's a lot of the three men on the commission right now seem to drown out the voices of the two females on the commission, and so the opinions of Commissioners Tabb and Noland a lot of times are ignored now.
I wonder if that could be a theme. The Jefferson County Commission needs a Me Too moment.
Yeah.
A moment of Me Too reflection. I don't know, but anyway. So how do you feel about the, I mean, the political field is pretty complicated, right, going into this election. There's
especially for Harpers Ferry District.
And now give me the dates. When is the primary and when's the general and what's the...
The primary is on May 8th, two weeks from this Tuesday, and the general is November 6th, I believe it is.
Okay. And so in the primary, what's going on in the primary? Just give us the lay of the land here. So
in the primary for Harpers Ferry District, Harpers Ferry Magisterial District seat, the incumbent right now is Peter Ornosco.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of dissatisfaction with Commissioner Ornosco. So there are three of us on the Democratic side running in the primary. That's me, Greg Lance, who was former mayor of Ranson and former county commissioner a couple decades ago, and Ralph Lorenzetti, who was the former county prosecutor.
Right.
And on the Republican side, there is Commissioner Ornosco, Gary Kogel,
right,
who works for the state auditor's office.
Big sign man.
Signs everywhere. And David Tabb, who has established a strong reputation for suing the county commission, as a matter of fact, the county and the county commission. And in fact, a couple of weeks ago, the state Supreme Court handed down a decision. Mr. Tabb can no longer
file
these lawsuits against the county without prior permission from the court system.
Yeah, I met him one time. He's a storybook.
Mm.
Character in a novel, maybe, but shouldn't be a county commissioner.
Very interesting person.
I know. So it's complicated. Well, it sounds like your competition in the primary is, you know, folks older than Bernie Sanders, you know, so...
I'm the youngest.
So the youth vote should come out for Kevin. What else you got in mind on the in terms of? I mean, I think the civility pitch is a good one, and because I think standards of service are, you know, if they go out the window, people lose respect for government altogether. What about the sheriff's department and the opioid crisis? I wanted to get you in on. I don't mean just the sheriff's department and the opioid crisis,
right.
but you have, there's a county health department, I believe, and willy nilly, you're going to get, the county is going to get embroiled in this unless it recedes somehow, but it's right. epidemic right now, and there's serious costs there. I mean, one, if you don't do something about it, if you just pretend it's going to go away and the prison system is going to take care of it, fine with me, but your convenience store is going to get robbed every other day, okay? Mm-hmm. And if you're in there at the same time, you might get shot too, because these guys are going to do whatever it takes to, if they're hooked, right? It doesn't matter.
Right.
And then the other issue, of course, is that it's happening in families. It's not just, oh, that must be a ghetto problem of some sort, you know, that kind of whole way of thinking. Public health crisis, and it's It's very serious. So what? And I see you go up to Martinsburg. I have good friends, and I walk down the drag. I have lunch in the diner there, the Blue Spoon, whatever it is, and it's just everywhere. There's people on the corner everywhere, just waiting for a fix, a connection.
Yeah.
So what's your view of that situation?
Unfortunately, it really has become an epidemic, and it's a very sad problem that we're facing right now. We're part of what the federal government calls a HIDA area, high intensity drug trafficking area, because of the opioid crisis. And next door in Berkeley County, I'm not sure if this is correct or not, but I heard not too long ago that Berkeley County now has the highest rate of opioid
addiction
abusers or opioid addiction in possibly the country. I'm not sure how we solve that problem. As the county government, you know, we don't have a lot of authority but we have to work with the state and with the federal government to try to find solutions to that or address it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, your county employees, problem. The sheriff's appointment, they're going to get swamped by it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because if nobody does anything else, it's them. I mean, the county and the town police forces. Mm-hmm. And I think they're a little getting a bit overwhelmed as it is, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, especially the sheriff's department,
which they now have to police Bolivar, where we're now broadcasting from,
right?
Because of, you know, I'm not sure if you can't afford to pay your own police force whether you deserve to be a town, but, you know, it's just my personal little picadillo there. But anyway.
And I've heard a lot of people here in Bolivar say similar things. I think that a lot of people here in Bolivar felt more secure when Bolivar had a contract with Harpers Ferry for policing services.
But this is partly a problem, if I'm not mistaken, of, you know, spending the winnings from the gaming severance. I call it, it's like a severance tax, right? Spending those winnings and thinking they're never going to go away. I mean, I remember listening to, you know, Commissioner Pelish, you know, just ridicule this thing about, you don't think that's going to go away?
Right, and that's one of the reasons that I'm considering home rule for the county, is because the county needs new sources of revenue. We've seen over the last few years that the different forms of revenue from the state are declining. Coal severance tax, the money that we get from gambling and from liquor sales, and those sorts of things. They're not going up, they're going down.
And there's just the property tax remaining, right? The property tax and impact fees and other fees, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned, I think, when we were talking before about the ambulance fee issue. How do you what's going on with that? How do you view that?
Yeah,
what is it, first of all, so people understand what we're talking about?
Well, the ambulance fee is a fee that everyone pays every year for ambulance services, emergency medical services, and the county commission this past fall, or within the last few months, had lowered the ambulance fee by $5 a year, which really didn't make any sense because the county, as I said earlier, is already facing a revenue shortfall this year. And so there's no good logic behind lowering that ambulance fee.
Yes, there is. There's bad logic, but there's a logic.
Bad logic.
And the logic is you are not entitled to a trip to the hospital. That's the political logic.
Well, and I disagree with that, because exactly. I think that good government has to I don't want to go as far as say completely take care of its citizens, because there's a certain amount of taking care of yourself that has to be done.
Right.
But if you can't provide for those services, then then what is government really doing for you? What good are they doing for you?
Right.
And this $5 a year decrease, even poor families can afford $5 a year. It just makes no good sense.
Right. Except for the bad sense.
Right.
That's the, yeah. Unfortunately, that little ideology is gaining ground. Mm. And
well, and to go along with that, there's a sort of a libertarian element going on at
our yes.
county commission as well. In February, we were facing a Mark Rail funding crisis earlier mm-hmm. this year.
Right.
The state of Maryland came to West Virginia and said that you need to pay us $3.8 million a year to help fund MARC train services to the Eastern Panhandle, or else we're going to discontinue the MARC train services.
Right.
And as soon as I heard about that, I jumped right on it, and I contacted all of our legislators in the Eastern Panhandle and said, you know, we need to address this issue. We can't afford to lose MARC train service to the Eastern Panhandle. How do we deal with this? And only a couple of legislators even responded to me. But I worked with a couple of those, one in particular this year, on that issue, on the MARC train funding issue. The 15th of February, our West Virginia Secretary of State, Tom Smith, flew into the Eastern Panhandle, came to the Jefferson County Commission, and spoke about the funding issue and asked each of the local governments in Jefferson County, the county government and the five municipalities in the county, to help pitch in money toward MARC train for the year. And the county commission listened to what Secretary Smith said, and then one of them said something to the effect of, why should we fund MARC train services if we're not getting something out of it ourselves? And that's a very short-sighted response. It's not a very thoughtful response, because what a lot of people here don't realize is that the MARC train services, even though there's only a few hundred people from the Eastern Panhandle that take the MARC train to commute to work every day, those people are working in these high-wage positions around the D.C. metropolitan area. They're paying West Virginia income tax because they're residents here. They bring that money back home.
And property
tax. They
pay
their property taxes here. They pay sales tax here because they have to buy groceries and gas to get to the station and wherever else they're going, just like all the rest of us. And about... this number was thrown out by the Secretary of State at that meeting. Approximately 20% of the entire revenue of the state of West Virginia, of the government of the state of West Virginia, comes from Jefferson, Berkeley, and Morgan counties. That's huge. And that's because of our proximity to the D.C. area.
Right.
So if we lose MARC train service to the Eastern Panhandle, a lot of people have said that they would have to move back to Maryland or Virginia.
Absolutely.
And then we, not only does the county suffer, but the whole state suffers. And our state, as we know, is one
not
of the
rich.
Poorest states in
well,
the US
it is
already.
Rich in some ways. It just hasn't figured out a way to tax the wealth, but yes, okay.
Right. We haven't done a good job with that. And yeah, so one of the commissioners at that meeting didn't see the importance in helping to fund MARC train services. And that's, I want to say unfortunate, but it's more than just unfortunate. It's very disappointing.
I think it's a more evidence that there's people running for office and seizing office that do not have their feet in the reality of government. I mean, they're running on an anti-government program. And putting anti-government people in charge of government services is can't help but lead to complete confusion, okay, and ultimately dysfunction. For example, I mean, we have certain departments in the federal government now that because they have a weird labor ideology. They think that we're going to get rid of remote work, telecommuting.
Right.
But I mean, the Washington D.C. metro and road systems can't handle any more traffic on any roads, or people will not get to work, period, okay, if you do that.
That's true, and there was a study done quite a few years ago now that said that U.S. 340 between Harpers Ferry and the state of Maryland in the section that it's two lanes is going to be a failed highway by the year 2030. And if we were to lose MARC train services to the Eastern Panhandle, those people, the ones that don't leave, they still have to get to work somehow. They're going to have to drive to Brunswick Station to catch the MARC
train.
They're going to have to drive over 340. And that 2030 projection as a failed highway is going to come a lot sooner.
Completely. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But the people, for example, in some departments of the federal government that are pushing this agenda of no telework, see, that's their agenda is not, it is anti-government. It's, I'm going to find ways to force you all to quit. Mm-hmm. That's going to hurt public services. Who cares? It's really some of these folks.
And that's a ridiculous thing.
It's not getting us anywhere. Anyway, I hope you win.
Well, thank you very much. I do too.
Just personally, I'm a thing. You know, if I get, I don't know. I think especially if your opposition is older than me, I don't think anybody. It's like Bill Gates said the other day. They asked him, look, if Microsoft gets in trouble, are you going to go back? And he says, nobody over 40 should run a high tech company. I used to work for Microsoft anyway, but I think it's also true here that we need younger people and dedicated people and people willing to experiment, okay, and do whatever it takes to find our way out of this looks like a growing mess that's happening lots of places. So I want to thank you so much for
and one other thing that I need to mention.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. But you should figure out a way to do all the things you haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah. Well, a big one that I haven't mentioned because we've touched on so many other issues here. But the Confederate plaque on the front of the courthouse, that was the beginning of the not the beginning, but it was a huge point in the how do I say the
uncivil meetings?
Uncivil meetings,
right.
So there's this plaque on the front of the courthouse that honors Confederate soldiers during the Civil War.
Yeah,
and it was put there by the United Daughters of the Confederacy Leetown chapter in 1986, and it was sort of done on a handshake.
Sure. Yeah.
The president of the county commission at that time, as I understand it, had made this arrangement with the. With the United Daughters of the Confederacy. The county commission itself never addressed it or voted to have that plaque put there. So it's been there now for these all these years. And a lot of people over the years have, they see it as offensive, understandably. And there's not another plaque like it on the courthouse anywhere. There's not one honoring Union soldiers during the war. There's not one honoring soldiers during the American Revolution. There's not one honoring soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan or World War II or World War I or any other war. Just that one for Confederate soldiers. And so a group of concerned citizens went to the county commission this past fall to ask to have that plaque removed. And the United Daughters of the Confederacy group has disbanded since 1986, but some of the members from that time had made a proposal to the county commission to have that plaque removed and put in a certain place, a different place, where it would still be there for
Heritage observers, et cetera. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Right. But it would be removed from the courthouse.
Yeah.
And, you know, it shouldn't be on the courthouse. The courthouse is the people's house. It represents all the people of the county. And certain members of the county commission decided that no, it should not be removed. And certain people who spoke before the commission were treated very disrespectfully about their opinions and their concerns. And like you said, one of them was told pretty much to shut up and was threatened with being tased. And so that's an issue that we have to address at the county commission level if I'm elected as well. We have to remove that plaque. It's a very contentious issue. It's a very controversial issue, and understandably, it doesn't belong there.
I think that would be a good thing. I mean, it's offensive, obviously, to African Americans, you know, but to anybody who opposes slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's like sometimes I wonder whether Lincoln was right with malice toward none. He was right about a lot of things, though. I would like to put it to bed. But
he was also wrong about a lot of things, but he was right about that issue.
You know. And so anyway, I want to thank you very much for joining me today here. I think it's a good place. If you get podcasts too long, people don't listen to them.
Right.
I've learned that you know, over my life. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I hope you have a successful campaign. Let me know any other way we can help. And I'll get this out, and you'll see. Everybody, tune in to podcast.enlightenradio.org, probably about later this afternoon or early tomorrow morning, and you'll.
And I would ask anyone who's listening that wants to know more about me to go to my website, which is kevincardin.us, or you can send me a message at kevin@kevincardin.us.
Kevincardin.us. You know, the U.S. domain.
Mm-hmm.
You can just get it if you want. You just apply for it, right?
Yeah, just like .com.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, they have so many domains now. Oh, dear. All right. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. This is the Winners and Losers radio program. My name is John Case, and that's it for today. Take care. It's late, but everything comes next.
If it's black or white, because it's out for blood tonight.